At any rate, let me give you a rundown of what you're going to be hearing this evening. We're going to take a look at an account from the Iranian Mujahideen, namely the people rebelling against Ayatollah Khomeini, that in fact the United States is still selling arms to Iran. That may change, but that will serve as sort of a kicker for the broadcast this evening. After that, we're going to take a look at a fantastic article, one of many dug up for us by our Italian translator, Dave, and again the fellow who's been basically paying the price for doing this kind of excellent and revelatory work. We're going to take a look at some very, very interesting connections between Italian and French fascists and the Iranian Islamic militants who have, been holding sway in Iran for the last 8 years and have been dominating the headlines in the last couple of days or so. Then we're going to take a look at the intersection, first of all, between an Italian fascist named Miglioli, another Italian fascist named Franco Freda, both affiliated with the Piazza Fontana and Bologna bombings, and the Iranian Islamic militants. We're also going to take a look, interestingly enough, at the involvement of Iranian militants in Italy, the same forces and elements of the Red Brigades, a Red Brigade unit called the Fighting Communist Proletariat, or Fighting Communist Party, as it's now known. Interestingly enough, that group took credit for the assassination last April of an Italian senator named Ruffilli, who, interestingly enough, just happened to have been on the commission that investigated the Propaganda Due Lodge. They do tend to work that way. Then we're going to look at a very fine article which will anticipate, in many ways, next week's material. This is an article from the Oakland Tribune by Kevin Coogan and Marty Lee, and it will deal with connections between French fascists and Iranian militants, and in particular, a fellow named François Jeannot, who was a Nazi intelligencer from World War II, a Swiss Nazi financier, and a fellow very much involved with the Nazi-generated Middle Eastern terrorism that we focused on in RFAs 4, 22, and 31 and 32, to one extent or another. Then we're going to play a segment, a long tape segment, maybe 45 to 50 minutes or so. That is going to consist of some material from a book called Unhealed Wounds by Erna Paris, a book both Nip and I stand on with both feet. One of the best books I think ever written about the actual dynamics of world fascism and international terrorism and how they work together. This is going to deal with the intersection of people like François Jeannot, Jacques Vergès, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the SS major who was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and much of the third position direct action Middle Eastern terrorist milieu, which is going to occupy the focus for tonight's broadcast. After that, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to take a look at a group called the Giuliani Group, which is a group of Italian gangsters, which was affiliated both with right and left-wing terrorism. They lurk in the background of the Bologna bombing. They also are hooked up with a group of Red Brigade terrorists called the Fighting Communist Union. Now, that's different from the Fighting Communist Proletariat or Fighting Communist Party. We're talking PCC and UCC, although the PCC and UCC seem to be pretty much two different sides of the same unfortunate coin.
CC.
Yep. And we're going to take a look, first of all, at the intersection between the Giuliani Group and the UCC, the Fighting Communist Union. Then we're going to take a look at the interesting link-up between the Fighting Communist Union, their assassination of an Italian Star Wars general, Licio Giorgieri, and we're going to take a look at the investigating the people investigating that crime and their stop-off in, of all places, Istanbul, Turkey, which led Italian journalists to speculate that they were possibly looking once again into, that's right, Mehmet Ali Agca and the shooting of Pope John Paul II. You notice some Turks were recently threatening the Pope. There have been a lot of things happening on the Turkish front. The Turkish Premier Özal escaped assassination at the hands of a gray wolf, then immediately came to the United States, and he, I guess, was about to complain about a reduction in U.S. aid. I wonder if perhaps he received some instructions along with that bullet, and if perhaps that toned down his ire somewhat. Then the Pope goes to Austria to talk with Kurt Waldheim, and a couple of Turks are supposedly threatening him, although now the Austrian authorities have said that was just a hoax. It's interesting that the Turkish front, so to speak, seems to be heating up at the same time. We're going to take a look again at the trip to Istanbul, Turkey, of the people investigating the link between the Fighting Communist Union and Licio Giorgieri, an assassinated Italian Star Wars general. Then we're going to take a look at another almost predictable development from the standpoint of longtime One Step Beyond and Radio Free America listeners, namely the fact that in a Red Brigade's hideout, it was discovered that the Red Brigades were showing a lot of interest in Judge Carlo Palermo, the fellow who began investigating the Stiebaum Arms for Drugs ring, which figures not only in the shooting of Pope John Paul II, but apparently also in the Iran-Contra scandal. As we've seen, those two have dovetailed very nicely. Then we're going to take a look at a connection between the Giuliani Group the group hooked up with the fighting Communist Union, and the assassination of Aldo Moro, and we'll talk more about that later, and connections between the Giuliani group, the Red Brigades involved in the Moro killing, and, that's right, some of the people involved with Stibom. And we're going to close with an interesting article from the Swiss Journal about Licio Gelli and some of the things he's been saying in Italy. And when Licio speaks, many, many people quake in their boots in Italy, and that's exactly what this article says. The boy is rattling them bones, and a lot of people are sweating under the arms in Italy. Okay, first article. And research credit on this goes to another one of our listeners, not Dave, our Italian translator, but a fellow named Jim, who used to be our phone screener here and is still on deck and doing some magnificent work. This article was carried in a lot of the local papers. Jim dug this up for us out of the Los Angeles Times of June 28th of 1988. It's a story by Norman Kempster of the LA Times. It's dateline Washington and headlined, Khomeini still secretly getting U.S. arms, Iranian rebels charge. Anti-Khomeini Iranian rebels have captured documents indicating that the Iranian government continues to obtain weapons from the United States, a senior rebel official claimed Monday. Soon, in a press conference, we will reveal documents showing that weapons are still going to the regime from the United States, Moshe Rezai, who functions as foreign minister for the rebels, told reporters. He was in Washington for a rally to celebrate the rebels' victory earlier this month in the Iranian border town of Mehran. The Reagan administration maintains that it halted all weapons deliveries to Iran after the Iran-Contra scandal broke almost 2 years ago. Rezai's trip is part of a campaign by the Mujahideen, the rebel organization, to establish its credibility as a serious opposition group that might someday displace the government of the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. And so again, we don't know, we can't obviously verify those reports 100%, but it is consistent with something that we've seen over the years, which is that the United States has a very interesting way of arming an awful lot of the people it winds up going into battle against. And again, people should consider the possible motives for this, whether perhaps the arms deals are being used as vehicles for infiltration. In a very key section from Le Matin in June of 1984 that we went over in Radio Free America number 20, in discussing how arms deals are used as an instrument of foreign policy, Glauco Partel, a fellow from the Stibom Arms for Drug Ring, was describing that the illicit under-the-table sale of arms serves as a very effective device of foreign policy because it permits the circulation of bribes and thereby political control. And what he didn't say is it also permits infiltration and the eventual co-opting of some of these terrorist groups. And the theme of tonight's broadcast, I guess, is the merging of the left and right for whatever purpose. That is the fascist third position. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the connections between Islamic fundamentalists, Palestinian activists and terrorists, and ultra-fascists, both in Italy, France, and also in the United States. And again, one of the things that lurks in the background of all of this is Ali North, his connections with Manzer el-Kassar of Abu Abbas fame and Abu Nidal fame, and some of the interesting connections between the Reagan White House, which is inveigled so heavily against inveigled, is that the word? Inveigled, I think, against terrorism so heavily over the years, and yet seems to be hooked up with so many of the very terrorists that it professes to be opposed to.
Just like the Reaganites and the Gaddafiites seem as if they must be at opposite ends of the spectrum, but when you look a little more closely, you find out they're working together. Just as Licio Gelli and his right-wing para-fascist friends in Italy and the Ayatollah's folks in Iran seem like they must be at opposite ends of the spectrum, and then when you examine a little more closely, you find that they are in fact quite similar and quite connected. Well, in the same way, something we were talking about at the beginning of the broadcast, and I wanted to underline again, in the same way, those of us who are out there receiving this kind of stuff, having it handed to us as daily news, no matter how different we all are, we're in the same position too. In other words, if you're somebody who is going to see this story, for instance, about the Iranian airline that we've been talking about a little bit tonight, it's been shot down. If you're the kind of slack-jawed idiot who's going to open the paper tomorrow and say, well, son of a gun, I guess they had it coming. Or conversely, if you are the kind of person who's going to pick it up and say, oh, how horrible, what a terrible thing to happen. Whether you're somebody who's going to blame the Reagan administration, whether you're somebody who's going to blame the Ayatollah Khomeini, the differences are not so important as the fact that you're all in the same boat. We're all in the same boat on this, which is we have been manipulated, and we are continuing to be manipulated. And as long as we believe these stories that are handed out, No matter what we believe or how we react to them, we are being manipulated. We are not reacting to the real news.
One of the concepts to bear in mind as you listen to what the long article Nip is about to read you, and again, this all of the articles with two exceptions this evening were gleaned for us by Dave, our Italian translator, and he's not from Italy, but he translates the Italian press for us. The Germans have a term called Interessengemeinschaft, or community of interest. There's no precise English equivalent. That's what the IG and IG Farben stands for, and it means a community of interest. It doesn't necessarily imply a conspiracy, although it implies that indirectly, but it implies that after a while people learn which pellet to push in order to, which lever to push in order to get their food pellet. One of the things to think about is the relative domestic bankruptcy of the policies both of Ronald Reagan and the Ayatollah Khomeini. Both have been a stone disaster on the home front, and really, I think people should think about the extent to which each of these aging, old, sick old men has been able to rule primarily by whipping up the war fuhrer and waving the flag and invoking the names of their martyred young men, etc., etc., and basically to create a media circus and sort of a mini Nuremberg rally. People should consider that particular tactic and see to what extent people like Muammar Gaddafi, people like Ayatollah Khomeini, and people who would appear to be on the opposite side of the spectrum, and note the use of the term appear, like Ronald Reagan, in fact, have many things in common, and that if they learn to perhaps send a few people out to get killed, and they may learn that eventually they have, it's worth keeping each other around, because they can keep each other in power.
Symbiosis is the word. We are going to read one of the aforementioned Italian translations, this one from Panorama magazine of February 14th, 1988. And you'll hear a bunch of names you don't know, some of them you may know, and we'll go back and straighten some of this up for you. Anyway, from Panorama, again translated by Dave, our Italian translator. Surprise! In the same Vicenza post box, messages arrive for both militants of the extreme right and friends of the Islamic Students Association. For the DIGOS, the DIGOS, D-I-G-O-S, who'd already picked up signals of solidarity between Iranians and the NAR, this is the chance for vigorous inquiries. In Rovigo, in the home of Giovanni Meglioli, a neo-fascist defendant in the Bologna trial, that's the Bologna railway station bombing trial, appears other pro-Khomeini material. The Italian, quote, the Italian popular vanguards express solidarity with the Iranian people, quote, unquote. A glance among the letters and pamphlets gives understanding to the head of DIGOS. DIGOS, in this case, is the investigating agency. Giuseppe Ipalomeni, an investigating magistrate, Felice Casson, that contacts between Italian neo-fascists and Iranian exiles are solid. Let me just give you that last. That's the meat of it right there. A glance among the letters and pamphlets gives understanding to the head of DIGOS, Giuseppe Ipalomeni, and investigating magistrate Felice Casson that contacts between Italian neo-fascists and Iranian exiles are solid. Our story begins in the Venice apartment of Abedi Tari, T-A-R-I, a 37-year-old student. Police find lots of money and evidence of big or long trips. The best secrets are messages written in Arabic directly from the Tehran government. For some time, it's been known that Italian neo-fascists, especially friends of Franco Freda, F-R-E-D-A, recently acquitted for the Piazza Fontana massacre, have been attracted to Islam via, quote, exiles from Marxism and capitalism, unquote. Freda, interviewed by Panorama, says, quote, for one who is anti-American, anti-Soviet, and anti-Zionist like me, Khomeiniism is a hope. One has to go back to the 13th century to find another experience so bright, unquote. Freda's admiration for Iran's leader goes back many years. Quote, when Khomeini was in exile in Paris, some of my comrades brought him my books and he deigned to bless them, unquote. Old acquaintances like Professor Claudio Muti want to give legal aid to an Islamic-leaning magazine called Jad, J-A-D.
I suspect that may be Jihad.
Could be, or it could just be the Italian version of Jihad, published in Carmagnola. Skipping down. Abedi Tari, investigators suspect, this is the 37-year-old student, investigators suspect may not be alone. From here it goes to other inquiries in Padua, Milan, Genoa, Rome, Perugia, Lecce, Reggio Calabria, and Catania. In Catania, in the mosque on Via Castamarini, a meeting is uncovered between the Islamic Students Association and the lawyer Michele Papa, Gaddafi's representative in Sicily. Undoubtedly an interesting circumstance, but still not enough to make a determined step in the investigation. Abedi Tari, we'll mention that later.
Yeah, I think probably there's such a long article, and all these articles are so involved, plus it's translated, that maybe we should probably go back and hit each point as we go through.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Among other things, they mentioned Michele Papa, Gaddafi's representative in Sicily. Now, Gaddafi, as longtime listeners to the show know, Gaddafi has a longtime affiliation with the Italian left and with the old line fascist European left in general, including
European right.
European right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you.
But actually, it is.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Fascist European left.
We're going to flip-flop back and forth on this a lot tonight. Gaddafi has a long-time relationship with the European right, including one of the leaders ever since the end of World War II of the European right, Otto Skorzeny, who, with Muammar Gaddafi, funded the Paladin Group, which was part of the Internationale Fascista, which is about as far to the right as you can get.
One of the things, too, we're not going to have time to get into them this evening, perhaps in one of the future broadcasts on the subject. You heard the name there, Michele Papa. Now, that's an interesting fellow who is one of the... He's Gaddafi's representative in Italy, as the article indicates. He's also a fellow who hooks up with Italian fascists, and although the name may not be too familiar to Americans, he helped decide the 1980 election by working with Francesco Pazienza and Michael Adine on the Billy Gates story. And, of course, Mo Gaddafi comes into that one, too. More later.
That's right. So, a meeting between the Islamic Students Association and the aforementioned Michele Papa, Gaddafi's representative in Sicily. Abedi Tari is the leader of a group composed of 8 Iranian students, a Syrian, and a Lebanese. The group moves from city to city, organizes, quote, general European seminaries, unquote, probably seminars, and telephones, analogous working groups in Paris and Bonn. In Italy, it's been operating since 1984 and already has an imposing mass of index card files on, quote, enemies of the revolution, unquote. Skipping down in the article. The investigators keep wiretaps. Sometimes they run into words like, oh, before I start this, I want to mention, we're going to see an example of who an enemy of the revolution, according to these people, appears to be, or the kind of person that seems to be an enemy of the revolution. We talk about Senator Ruffilli a little later on. The investigators keep wiretaps. Sometimes they run into words like arms, carpets, drugs. Witnesses confirm that Abedi Tari was seen supervising arms shipments to Iran in the ports of Venice and Talamone. The suspicions remain simply that, until Abedi calls a number in Genoa. It corresponds to the Islamic Republic Shipping Company. Digos, again, the investigating agency, seizes documents that reveal an arms traffic. The company in Genoa puts police on the trail of 3 others very important in the field of commerce and the manufacture of arms and explosives. The European Armaments Company, SEA, in Turin, CONSAR, CONSAR, in Rome, and REMIE, REMIE, in Vicenza. The documents seized are really explosive. They reveal a traffic not only to Iran from Italy, but also to Iran from Bulgaria, France, West Germany, even Yugoslavia. Digos finds plane tickets at SEA that prove trips carried out by Tehran's rulers. In Vicenza, as a result of evidence found at the Remie company, police reopened their investigation into a Red Brigades faction which used the obsolete name, quote, Fighting Communist Proletariat, or its initials in Italian, PCC. Okay, let me give that to you again because we're going to get into the UCC later on. Okay, so Digos, investigating this connection between the Islamic student group and their connection with various shipping companies who are sending arms to Iran, finds plane tickets proving trips carried out by Tehran's rulers, and in Vicenza, as a result of evidence found at the Remie company, police reopen their investigation into a Red Brigades faction which used the obsolete name Fighting Communist Proletariat, otherwise known as the PCC. The investigators of an abortive attack last February, in the instigators, excuse me, the PCC, the instigators of an abortive attack last February. And it's uncovered in Rome that the CONSAR company is connected, along with SEA, to the French arms maker Luchère. Okay, so again, a very complex web of names. Some of them, as Dave mentioned, we've heard already. Certainly Franco Freda, we've talked about, the Piazza Fontana massacre bombing, the Bologna railway station bombing, very familiar to us. One of the things most familiar to us about these is the involvement of a man by the name of Stefano Della Chiai. Stefano Della Chiai, of course, linked heavily to not only to Licio Gelli, who we'll talk about later, and we've talked about a great deal, but to European fascism in general, and also to something called the third position, the terza posizione, the strange Maoist Hitlerite philosophy that has been used as an excuse for certain terrorist activities that seem to benefit nobody except the extreme right.
Not only Hitler and Mao, but also Gaddafi. The slogan is Hitler and Mao united in struggle, and they use a philosophy, and it's a fascist philosophy. It should be noted, this is not a progressive philosophy. It uses a fascist philosophy, which is an infusion of Hitler, Mao, and Mo Gaddafi. And the Piazza Fontana massacre is interesting, too, because one of the people indicted in that was a P2 Italian intelligence official and fascist named Guido Gianettini, who was associated with the third position. He was not only involved with the Piazza Fontana, but interestingly enough, he served as an agent, an arms distributor, for the BND, the Galen Organization, which was distributing arms to the Italian far right under the auspices of Merex, a company which we're going to touch on later in connection with names like Manzer El-Kassar, Abu Abbas, Odfried Hepp, and that erstwhile American patriot Oliver North.
As a matter of fact, I'm just listening to this. We haven't talked about a lot of this stuff for a while. I think very quickly I'm going to run down a few of these names.
We better tell them what the P2 is, because otherwise we'll never get off the ground.
Indeed.
Tonight.
For those of you who know this stuff like the back of your respective hands, please bear with us. We'll try and make it quick. For those of you who have joined us fairly recently, we spent the best part of, 5 or 6 years talking about the P2. It's very familiar to many of us. The P2 is the Propaganda Due. That's the P2 is the way that you translate the initials in Italian. The Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge. It is not a Masonic lodge in the classic sense of a Mason's lodge. It was a front for a shadow government, so-called by its members and by the Italian authorities when it was discovered, a shadow fascist government of Italy. The Grand Master of the P2 Lodge was a well-connected fascist, a former Oberleutnant in the SS during World War II by the name of Licio Gelli. Licio Gelli also, besides being a prominent fascist and the head of the P2 Lodge, an extremely wealthy and well-connected man who walked in the highest circles of government and also in the lowest circles of scum and international riffraff.
He helped set up, incidentally, according to David Yalop in God's Name, the Rat Line, which brought a lot of Nazi war criminals to Latin America and elsewhere in the New World to work for, among others, U.S. intelligence. One of the best ways to understand Licio Gelli is to understand his nickname, which in Italy, well, he has several of them, including Il Venerabile, the old respected one, I guess is how that would be translated. But his main nickname is the Puppet Master.
That's right. Now, Licio Gelli had his hands on a whole lot of puppets. On the one hand, as we talked about, he was walking in some very expensive and wealthy and important circles. We'll get back to that in a moment. Interestingly enough, when you start dealing with the fascist right and the international fascist right, it's interesting how the scum and the highly placed go hand in hand, and often are in fact the same people. And Licio Gelli is certainly one of those real telltale folks who are walking both worlds at the same time. Now, Licio Gelli, on one hand, was apparently intimately connected to several people like Stefano Della Chiai, the worst kind of fascist terrorist, thug, murderer, etc., and a variety of people through Stefano Della Chiai of various sorts affiliated with the extreme Italian right, the mob, murder gangs, kidnapping gangs, things of that nature. On the other hand, Licio Gelli was also, through the P2, intimately connected to people like the heads of military and intelligence in Italy, various government members, a lot of wealthy society people, and two wealthy society people in particular that are very interesting for our purposes, Michele Sindona and Roberto Calvi. Michele Sindona we'll just touch on briefly. He was a prominent Italian fascist and also at the same time a prominent financier who both acted as the financial advisor for the Vatican Bank and at the same time for the American CIA and the Mafia, all at the same time. Roberto Calvi, another close friend of Licio Gelli, also a high-ranking P2 member, Roberto Calvi headed up the Banco Ambrosiano in Milan, the largest private bank in Italy. Through his P2 connections and also through Licio Gelli's and Sindona's and others' connections into the Vatican, Roberto Calvi used Vatican banking OKs or Vatican banking backing to set up a bunch of dummy companies, dummy loans, use them to support fascist government in South America and make millions of dollars for himself and his friends, meanwhile bilking stockholders right and left. Roberto Calvi eventually met a very ugly death. Some people have suggested it was a suicide. Most sensible people know better. Roberto Calvi, as so many people in this case, like Michele Sindona later on, go to their grave bearing the secrets of this whole affair. Now, we've got the P2. We've got the Banco Ambrosiano, the largest private bank in Italy, which became an absolute rotten, festering mass of plots, counterplots, financial schemes, fascist money laundering gimmicks, etc., etc. We also have a group called Stibom. Stibom, at the time of its being broken open, was the largest guns and drug running operation in the world.
And before we go to Stibom, I think it might help the transition to Stibom if we discuss the Red Brigades and Jelly's connection with them,
and also the
Super Sees Me too. Now, one of the facets of P2's we're talking about a Masonic lodge, which is actually anything but a Masonic lodge. It's a front. And it was a very powerful front, which in effect became literally a crypto-fascist government of Italy. It ran the show. One of the major ways in which it ran the show was by controlling a very, very important and overtly fascistic and conspiratorial group within the Italian military and intelligence services, in particular the intelligence service SISMI, S-I-S-M-I, a foreign intelligence service, which became known as the Super SISMI. It was very similar to what we saw in the Iran-Contra scandal with the Enterprise. It was an insider's group who were above the normal machinery of national policy and determining that policy from outside of the usual channels. And it is no coincidence at all that many of the conspiratorial forces within the Reagan White House over the years have direct connections to the Super SISMI. People like Francesco Pazienza and others of the Super SISMI, Michele Papa, who is affiliated with them, though not a member of them, have worked with the Reagan White House. And indeed, Licio Gelli, former Oberleutnant in the U.S., and in the SS rather, was an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. Now, one of the ways in which these Italian intelligence officials, this fascistic group within the Italian National Security Establishment has maintained social and political control was by the systematic and deliberate use of both right and left-wing terrorism in something called the Strategy of Tension, named that by the aforementioned Stefano Della Chiaia. This basically used terrorist incidents to keep the Italian political pot boiling, to keep people worked up. It basically is Schrecklichkeit. It's a fancy name for Schrecklichkeit, frightfulness, terrorism, by setting off bombs and blaming them, in particular blaming them on the left. The right would set off bombs and blame them on the left and commit assassinations and things of this type. The Italian electorate was driven to the right by this series of terrorist incidents. And one of the most interesting things about that terror is that the Italian Red Brigades, ostensibly communist terrorists, in fact turned out to have been founded in considerable measure by none other than P2 Grandmaster and former SS man, Licio Gelli. This was the conclusion of an Italian parliamentary commission headed up by Italian PM, Tina Anselmi, which specifically looked into the P2 and found that the P2 basically ran the Red Brigades. In a translation that we got courtesy of Jonathan Marshall and Ted Rubenstein some time ago, one of the members of the Super SISMI group, an Italian intelligencer named Pietro Musumeci, was basically running both right and left-wing terrorism. One terrorist was quoted as saying he was offered the opportunity to work for either the right or the left, and he chose the right because it was more familiar territory. Well, as we're going to see this evening, not all Italian fascists have made that same choice for that same reason.
Indeed, and one of the key things with the Red Brigades, as we've talked about in the past, is that with as bloody a political history as Italy has had in the past 40 years since World War II, the most famous and certainly the most effective of the Italian political murders was the murder of Prime Minister Aldo Moro, affected by the Red Brigades after a kidnapping, again, at a time, as so often happens when you go back and look at the Red Brigades, at a time when the legitimate political left in Italy was making a bid to be allowed back into power again, something that the U.S. government and the right-wing elements within Italy have been fighting ever since World War II.
Well, the Super SISMI specifically was a group put together to guard against the possibility of a communist ascension to government. The Communist Party in Italy, by the way, is not only one of the largest and most powerful political parties, but is also, incidentally, one of the most respected political parties in all of Western Europe. A far cry from the usual view in this country of, a bunch of addle-brained, bomb-throwing crazies running around sloganeering and chanting about the dictatorship of the proletariat. Far from it. And Aldo Moro had offered for the first time formal effective participation by the Italian Communist Party as a main governing factor. Ask yourself what conceivable motive a leftist group would have for blowing away a man that would be taking steps like that.
That's right. But indeed, that's what happened. And as we look again, this is the Strategy of Tension. When you find out that the Red Brigades were founded by Licio Gelli and run by Super SISMI, then the fact of Aldo Moro's kidnapping and murder becomes a lot clearer. Now, at the same time we have these elements operating, we're going to touch briefly on two other elements. One of them is Stibom. Stibom we have to touch on briefly because it's so vast, but it was a huge gun guns and drugs operation.
And both Stibom and the Aldo Moro killing are not only going to be coming into play later in this broadcast, but are going to be hooking up later in this broadcast.
That's right. And Stibom, a vast guns and drugs smuggling operation that, of course, was used by, among other things, the P2 Lodge and Grandmaster Licio Gelli and others for a variety of reasons. The profits from Stibom were apparently laundered through the Banco Ambrosiano, among other things, and through other various financial things that the P2 people had access to. And, of course, the fact of having control of that kind of huge shipment of arms and drugs enabled them to do a lot of other things. One of the things it appears to have enabled them to do was attempt to bump off or at least send a very strong message to Pope John Paul II. And as the Bulgarian thesis put forward by the CIA and various CIA-related journalists was pulled apart, underneath the Bulgarian thesis, which was absolutely untenable in any sensible examination, underneath the Bulgarian thesis became very obvious the skeleton of the P2. And there is we spent, again, 5 or 6 years talking about this. We can't possibly do it in 10 minutes, but scads and scads of connections between the various P2 people, the Super Seize Me people,
American intelligence, members of the secret team, specifically Theodore Shackley, indeed, and also a fellow named Ruzi Nazar, or Ruzi Nazarov, a former member of an SS punishment battalion who went to work for the CIA after the war and was apparently still maintained contacts not only with CIA but with Paul Henze, one of the first proponents of the Bulgarian thesis. And he was very close to Alparslan Terkes and the National Action Party, of which the Grey Wolves are the youth wing, very much like the Hitler Youth. And he was the representative for the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at the Dallas Wackel Conference in 1985. Interestingly enough, the Pope shooting happened at a time when the Vatican and the Kremlin were reaching a diplomatic rapprochement. For all of their differences, they had found some common ground, namely not wanting Poland to be turned into a nuclear battlefield, not wanting the Middle East to be turned into a nuclear battlefield, and not wanting the whole Earth to be turned into a nuclear battlefield, none of which sat particularly well, apparently, with Messrs. Shackley and others.
Another thing, too, again, not to go into too great detail on the Pope shooting, but just to sum it up, again, something that, just to look at these facts, Mehmet Ali Agha was trained with a group of people who were trained by Frank Turpel, ex-CIA agent, quote-unquote ex-CIA agent, who also happened to be the CIA's man in Libya for some time. Mehmet Ali Agha was out of a group, the Grey Wolves, which were a fascist organization explicitly linked to European fascists, and specifically also to Stibom and the drug trade that was linked to the P2 later on. Mehmet Ali Agha's gun came from a man by the name of Horst Grillmeier. Horst Grillmeier himself, an Austrian with connections to Stibom and other groups. And Mehmet Ali Agha's paymaster for the operation.
And Grillmeier also had, perhaps most importantly, connections to the BND, which had brought in the weapon.
The West German's equivalent of the CIA.
Which, again, is the final incarnation of Reinhard Gehlen's organization, which was the Nazi Eastern Front Intelligence Group from World War II.
And the paymaster for the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II was a man by the name of Bekir Çelenk. Bekir Çelenk just happened to be also somebody who was a member of Stibom, also a man himself connected to U.S. government intelligence, connected to various Italian fascist sources. So we've got the gun, the training, the assassin, and everything else coming from various fascist sources, all of them linked very tightly together through the Italian P2, and yet people are still trying to convince us that it was the Bulgarians. Well, folks, I think it's pretty obvious.
Nip, I'm going to turn the tape over here. If you want to talk to him for just a second, I'm going to give him some of the tape references for some of the RFA references for new listeners.
Absolutely. Go ahead. But when you have a group of 60 or 70 people sitting around planning day in and day out to launder money, to murder people, to make other people disappear, to lie to the press, to own the press in other cases, to assassinate world leaders, to topple governments.
To start wars. And smuggle 3 hydrogen bombs to Syria, which is not just hydrogen, but 20 megaton hydrogen bombs, which is one of the scams Stibom appeared to have been involved in.
That's right. And when you're doing all of this in a supposed Masonic lodge, and you're operating at the same time as you're having your supposed lodge meetings, you're in contact with the representatives of several Western governments and the inner circle of Western intelligence. Well, folks, I don't know what you can call it if you can't call it a conspiracy, but whatever the hell it is, that's what was going on, and that's the stuff that we're updating on tonight.
You can call it your mother, but it's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
Now, the one of the most interesting things, too, is that for people that are new to this, this whole phenomenon is something we have been referring to for a long time as the Mediterranean merry-go-round, and I think as these connections begin to whirl by your ears, I think you begin to understand why we call it that. We also call it that because it keeps on going around and around. We haven't even begun to scratch the connections. The P2 Lodge literally had branches in a number of different countries. Brazil, Uruguay, Monte Carlo, among others. Very, very important organization.
Argentina,
very important branch in Argentina, affiliated with the junta there. The This particular connection, the P2 connections go all over the place. They go to George Bush. Licio Gelli was described by another P2 member as having met him standing around in a group of U.S. military officers in the uniform of a United States Air Force general, and described himself as having been aided during his flight from justice, because he was a fugitive, by his good friend George Bush. And with the apparent connections of the P2 people to the 1980 election, which they helped swing for Ronald Reagan, people should not view this as something which is in any way remote from American politics. The Pope shooting was a tremendous propaganda coup, even though it was pure horse manure in terms of the factual representation. The fact of the matter is that a traditional block of the traditional Democratic Party, you know, your inner city blue-collar workers of Polish, Irish, Italian, Lithuanian extraction, were very, very alien. Well, a number of things have been alienating them from traditional liberal politics, but that certainly helped make them absolutely rabid. That, on top of the solidarity thing, and helped keep them solidly in the Reagan camp. Blue-collar workers went for Reagan in 84.
And it worked. One last thing before Dave reads this article, though obviously we've given you a dizzying whirl, a merry-go-round, as we put it, of names and things, but the most important thing to hang on to tonight is to understand that this darkest possible side of our Western societies, this clot of darkness, to be florid and dramatic about it, that was these was made up by these various people in intelligence, military, and extremely wealthy branches of industry, that, again, strangely enough, some of the best work that they got done was gotten done because of their affiliations with Middle Eastern terrorists and supposed or pseudo-leftist groups such as the Red Brigades and other, quote, communist terrorists. And these are the people who time and time again, and surely not by coincidence, after the number of times it happened, time and time again did exactly what benefited these particularly hideous group of Western intelligence-related fascists, again, with direct ties to the Italian government, the American government, all the way down the line. So what we've got, a group of government people, including our own government, getting their dirtiest work done by the use of Middle Eastern nationalist terrorists and European and American leftist terrorists.
Yeah, and again, one of the things to bear in mind here is that all of these groups, in turn, are very, very much taken with Ayatollah Khomeini and have demonstrable connections to the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist milieu that has been unleashed in Europe and the United States and the Middle East by the Ayatollah's gunsels. So that is perhaps the single most important thing. But again, Giovanni Maglioli, Franco Freda of the Third Position, both P2-related Italian fascists who were very much taken with Khomeini. Now remember, too, the Fighting Communist Party or Fighting Communist Proletariat, one of the groups also that apparently has linked up with the Iranian militants and their terrorist activities in Italy and elsewhere. Again, research credit for the following goes to Dave, who dug this up for us, too. Although this doesn't come from the Italian press, it does come from the Oakland Tribune of April 16th of 1988. This is a story by Terry Leonard of the Associated Press. Dateline Rome, and headlined, Italy's Red Brigades Kill Politician Ruffilli, R-U-F-F-I-L-L-I. Senator Roberto Ruffilli, a close friend and advisor of Premier Ciraccio di Mita, was shot to death yesterday at his home in northern Italy. An anonymous caller said Red Brigade's terrorists were responsible. Investigators told Italian news agencies the body of the 51-year-old Christian Democrat senator was found on a couch in his living room at Forli, 40 miles southeast of Bologna. They said he was shot in the back of the neck. A spokesman for the Interior Ministry said an anonymous telephone caller to the Bologna office of the Rome newspaper La Repubblica asserted responsibility on behalf of the Red Brigades. The spokesman quoted the caller as saying, quote, "We have killed Senator Ruffilli, attacking at the heart of the state. Red Brigades for the formation of the Fighting Communist Party." That is the PCC we mentioned just in the article that Nip just read you. Skipping down on the article, Maurizio Laudi, a magistrate who has investigated the terrorist group, was quoted by the news agency AGI as saying the Red Brigades for the formation of the Fighting Communist Party is the most dangerous and active group in what remains of the Red Brigades. He said it also is the most difficult to penetrate. Interrupting, we may see, we have a hint as to why down and a little later in the article. AGI said Ruffilli had received threatening phone calls in recent days. He led the Christian Democrat Committee on Problems of the State and was working with the Premier on institutional reform. Ruffilli was also on the parliamentary commission that investigated the P2 Masonic Lodge scandal. That last sentence perhaps should have been followed by the exclamatory phrase, surprise, surprise. The Red Brigades have a very interesting way of doing exactly the kinds of things that the P2, an ultra-right organization, would want them to do. And in fact, that should come as no surprise, since in fact, P2 Grandmaster Licio Gelli has, in considerable measure, been credited with founding the Red Brigades. And again, this fighting Communist Party is the group that is hooked up with the Iranian militants. One thing I forgot to do a second ago was to cite some RFA tape references. If people want to catch up on this admittedly very complex tangle of events, Radio Free America shows 17 through 21 dealt specifically with the P2 and the Pope shooting. Then Radio Free America shows 32 and 34 brought in a number of very, very interesting connections, again, on the Mediterranean merry-go-round, which intersect the Iran-Contra scandal in a big way with the shooting of the Pope and the P2 lodge. The whole Valsala Mecanotechnica connection, the interesting budding Gray Wolf connections now in the Pizza Connection case, going to, apparently, among others, George Bush and Donald Reagan, being some of the many connections between the Iran-Contra scandal and the P2 nexus.
All right. Another article from the Tribune here.
Also researched by Dave, our Italian translator.
And also written by some folks whose work we have used many times on this show. The article is entitled The French Right's Alliance with Iran. And it's, again, from the Tribune for January 8th, 1988. The article is by Martin A. Lee and Kevin Coogan.
This particular article, too, sums up in considerable measure an excellent article, the cover story on Mother Jones from May of 1987. I can't believe it's already more than a year since that came out. But a marvelous cover story on the, basically, what's called Europe's New Fascists. For those of you who'd like to go to a library that has Mother Jones, the cover story of May 1987 by Martin Lee and Kevin Coogan deals with Europe's new fascists and specifically some of the connections we're talking about here and, in particular, the politics of the fascist third position. And that Mother Jones article is much of it is summed up in a neat sort of way in the article that Nip's about to read you.
Iranian official Wahid Gorji, spelled G-O-R-D-J-I, a prime suspect in a bloody bombing spree that rocked Paris in 1986, was recently permitted to return to his native land in exchange for the release of two French hostages held in Lebanon. While debate raged over whether French Prime Minister Jacques Chirac had capitulated to terrorists, an important aspect of the case has been overlooked: Iran's support for right-wing extremists in Europe. This surprising connection surfaced last summer when French officials discovered a check written by Gorji for 120,000 francs, about $20,000, to Ogmios, a neo-Nazi bookstore and publisher in Paris. The money was used to finance a slick 48-page catalog promoting, quote, the myth of the Jewish Holocaust and other unsavory tracts. Gorji also arranged for two Ogmios members to accompany Alain de Benoist, France's leading new right intellectual, on an Iranian-funded junket to the front lines of the war with Iraq. Gorji first caught the eye of French authorities when an informer's tip led to a wiretap of an Islamic bookstore in a Paris suburb frequented by a group of Arabs who were subsequently arrested for the 1986 bombings that killed 13 people and injured hundreds. French intelligence pegged Gorji, a close friend of the bookstore owner, as the mastermind of the terrorist attacks. Investigating magistrate Gilles Bouloux's attempts to interrogate Gorji provoked a break in diplomatic relations between France and Iran last July. When Gorji took refuge in Iran's Paris embassy, police cordoned off the building. The Iranians retaliated by surrounding the French embassy in Tehran, and a 6-month standoff ensued.